You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 14 October. Tito Mboweni, Labour Minister, SARB Governor, Finance Minister, and of course, Twitter Chef. Rest in peace, good sir. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. We're getting some US results coming through. About 25, I think, have reported. But some banks, JP Morgan, most notably, and Equitas Property Fund results. I don't know, that looks attractive. Grant Alexander from Private Client Holdings, difference between wealth creation and preservation. And then Allianz Commercial, rising cost of cyber crimes in South Africa. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Club Med Beach Resort will be transformational for SA tourism. This according to ABSA's boss. The country's first all-inclusive resort in Tinley Manor near Ballito could unlock further beach development on the coast. Business day, Rand Water warns Gauteng reservoirs critically low. Bulk water utility Rand Water has implored municipalities to take swift action to avoid a disaster. They put a letter out this week, this weekend, and they threw the municipalities under the bus and then stomped on them. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.6%, NASDAQ up 0.2%. The East is mostly red. We got Sydney up a tenth. We got Tokyo closed for sports day. They do have the best holidays. Hong Kong down 0.6 and 10 cent off 0.4%. Commodities mix, gold 2,673. Brent lower at 78. 18. Platinum 986 and palladium down a dollar at 1,056. Rand 1743. Bitcoin 63,600. And top 40 opening call, a green open, but 15 points, which is what? 0.015%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. I said in the intro there, some bank results coming out. We got Wells Fargo. They weirdly still capped on how much their assets can be because of some, what they were opening fake accounts a couple of years ago. JP Morgan, of course, the biggie. It's not quite the blowout that we were seeing coming out of the pandemic. But man, these are still solid results, not an expensive stock and a good dividend payer.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, earnings season kicking off, as you said, on Friday. You know, it does tend to set the tone for certainly for equity markets for the next for the next few weeks. It used to be Alcoa used to kick it off because of A in the alphabet, and now we've got the banks. And as you said, I mean, there were some really good set of numbers. JP Morgan, you always look at the sort of price on the day, Simon, and that's always the best reflect of what you see on your screen. JP Morgan up 4.4%, mm-hmm. BlackRock up 3.6%, Wells Fargo up 5.5%. I mean, these are really solid sort of numbers, and I was trying to do the math as a bit of a joke to send out internally. I mean, $11 trillion, I think the number was for BlackRock's assets. So I was trying to convert the Rand value, and it wouldn't come up. My calculator screen wasn't big enough. So these are big, big numbers. But this week's going to be crucial, I think. You know, got another biggie. We've got Bank of America today, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs is a big one to watch, Morgan Stanley this week, Netflix as well. So really starting to heat up, and I suspect that's why we're seeing the markets a little bit of a, I guess, a little bit of a holding pattern until these numbers come out this week.
Yeah, we're getting into the thick of it. I'd forgotten about Alcoa, an aluminium maker.
Exactly.
It used to set the tone, and really, I mean,
always did, yeah.
Yeah, we used to live in weird times. Equities, property fund results. I mean, the UK, let's remove that completely, but doing well, a pure logistics play. I mean, this is a 9% forward dividend yield, 15% discount to NAV. That's kind of like the sweet spot for property stocks.
Yeah, it's actually funny enough, a client asked me last week to look at a couple of property shares, and this popped up on the radar. Just a slightly different spin to the rest of the sector, a little bit more high-end logistics. I mean, if you look at their portfolio, the likes of Amazon and a few others coming into play that are looked after by Equitas. So, you know, just that sort of high-end logistical business and a really handsome sort of suite of tenants, hasn't it? I mean, if you look at ShopRite, Spar, Amazon, all the rest. And in fact, you know, a little bit of a lagger compared to the rest of the basket this year. So I think it's worth a look. I mean, they were pretty decent numbers. Nice distribution. Everything was up. Growth projected to be up just marginally higher up. But nevertheless, I think this is one to keep an eye on.
And we should start to see rates coming down, bond yields coming down. It makes those sort of 9% property yields more attractive for investors.
Yeah, exactly. 9.26 to be exact. And actually, it's compared to the rest of the South African property sector. But I assume these yields have come down a bit because most of them have run pretty hard. And this actually hasn't run as much as the rest has. In fact, if we just do a quick little year-to-date performance of Equites, it certainly has lagged. It's only up about, it's only up about 2.3%. Mm-hmm. Look at some of the others, SA Corp Real 27, Fairvest, and some of the biggies, you know, like Highprop up 34%. Yeah. So yeah, agree with you. I think this is definitely one to take a look if you're looking at the property sector in South Africa.
Nick Kunze, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Grant Alexander, Director, Private Client Holdings. Grant, appreciate the early morning time. When we're investing through our lifetime, broadly two distinct phases we go through, a wealth creation and a wealth preservation. Obviously, we started the creation side of it. We need to, as investors, understand that distinction and what those nuances are. And with wealth creation stage, typically it's going to be very much growth focused and it's going to be high risk. We've got that time on our side. We can be a little more risky, which is, as a rule, going to be a lot more equities in our portfolio.
Sure. Good morning, Simon. Thanks for inviting me on your show. Yes, there is this distinction with the wealth creation and wealth preservation phases. From a wealth creation perspective, we generally start our journeys armed with enthusiasm and ambition, but sadly no investments. We apply this human capital to furthering our careers or businesses and start this savings process. I mean, that's the accumulation or this wealth creation phase. And then at some points, those investments exceed our human capital and we need to start drawing from our investments to supplement any earnings that we might still have. Perhaps we've consulted back to the company or the industry that we retired from. And then this typically would be that decumulation or wealth preservation phase. And they're just different risks to solve for. You know, there's many risks, but mainly we look at inflation and volatility, and there are lots of tensions and trade-offs when we transition from one of these phases to the next.
I like that point of the tension and trade-offs, and I want to touch on that in a moment. But we're also going to be, I mean, during our creation, and I like your point, we start with nothing except that human capital, what sits between our ears. We work, we spend less than we earn, save the difference, and we do that for decades and decades. And it's a fairly, as I said up front, I mean, it's going to be a higher risk. It's going to be growth focused. It's also going to be, I would imagine, more active and very diverse, as we can take those risks. We can perhaps go to corners of the market which someone in their retirement wouldn't be able to nor comfortable going.
Yeah, certainly. That's in theory, I think, is correct. In practice, we would probably guide towards a more sensible approach from a just a purely asset allocation point of view, leaning more towards growth assets, property, and equities, and obviously making sure that there's sufficient offshore allocation, generous offshore allocation. And, you know, there are nuances, and I think it depends on the size of the asset base, how far you reach out to private equity, venture capital, and really trying to knock it out the park.
And there's also, I mean, during that creation stage, we are going to be generating income. The key difference is that cash flow, in a sense, that we're generating, we're putting it back into the market. We're reinvesting it and sort of almost, in a sense, accelerating that compounding effect.
Definitely. That's an essential as to what's earning your income. And whatever is put into that nest egg needs to be reinvested, typically in high growth aggressive assets and much lower on the cash and fixed income side.
That transition from the creation to the preservation. I mean, in some senses, there might be a date, retirement, bang, that's it, you're now retired. Of course, as you mentioned, you might have some side hustles, you might consult back to the industry or even the company that you work for. The key point, perhaps, is that, you know, I remember when sort of my grandparents were retiring, you know, they were 65, life expectancy was maybe 10 years. Life expectancy is now 20 or 30. It's perhaps less of a line in the sand. It still is in some ways, but it's more transition, as you suggested, rather than an absolute pivot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Simon, you'll probably be surprised that there's 75% probability of at least one of a couple who are currently 60 mm-hmm. making it to age 90. So basically, if you're looking at four couples, three of those couples will have someone standing at age 90, at least one. So this is definitely a long-term period. As you say, unlike, say, 20 years ago when, you know, you worked for much of your life and only spent, say, 10 years in retirement and basically death sold for living too long and running out of capital. Now it really is long-term. And you need to drive those investments to deliver over that long term.
One of the issues in the preservation stage, of course, you're drawing down, you're spending. You mentioned offshore. You've got to, when you're in that preservation and spending part of the equation, you've got to match currency, your liabilities. If you've got everything offshore and the rand strengthens, you're in a bit of trouble. It's matching sort of where your currency investment with where you're spending. If you're invested in dollars and spending in ZAR, you've got to run that balancing act as well.
Quite right. And obviously, depending on the asset base as well, what typically we would do is look at the present value of future liabilities, mm-hmm. what that capital sum is, and invest it sensibly as if, and assuming one plans to live in South Africa mm-hmm. for the rest of time. And any excess capital typically would go offshore. So different investors, the look through asset allocation would be slightly different depending on that asset base. But quite right, if you only have enough money to see out your days in South Africa, you need to be sensible about the strength in the rand, as we've seen recently.
Being tax efficient, estate planning. I mean, I suppose this is not something which a 25-year-old in their first job is giving much thought to. But as we move through life, that becomes more and more important. And when we enter that retirement preservation phase, that becomes hugely important, particularly the estate planning. Point is, you can't do that on sort of, you know, day minus one. You've got to start working on that well in advance, particularly the estate planning, particularly the tax efficiencies.
Yeah, indeed. However, one must say that with the business owners, mm-hmm. Sometimes that planning in terms of generational transfer and estate planning happens too late. So really, for businesses that are growing, that needs to be solved for earlier rather than later. Because if you only sort of wake up to this issue when you know, you're maxing the value in your business, you know, the fees, the CGT, etc., will be quite onerous when transitioning possibly into a trust at that point in time. So planning needs to happen relatively early. But it sort of depends on the asset base.
I take your point, and we've had, I mean, this, you know, the first person to mention businesses and sort of the transitioning of that needs to be a well thought through and careful process. We'll leave it there. Grant Alexander, he's a director, Private Client Holdings. Appreciate the early morning, and that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Wealth creation, wealth preservation. What stage are you at? Are you still creating? Perhaps you're preserving. Have your vote. Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
James Santha Makapela, Senior Cyber Underwriter at Allianz Commercial. Santha, I appreciate the time today. Data breaches. Recent survey out says South Africa among top 15 in data breach costs. We've certainly seen increases in cyber insurance claims globally. So how's this comparing to the South African market? I mean, are businesses adapting? How come we're so far up that list of costs in terms of data breaches?
Yes, we've seen the increase in cost of data breaches worldwide. South Africa, there's nothing different when it comes to South Africa as well. It's an increased cost. This is due to, obviously, to data exfiltration, increased regulatory and legal requirements, digital distribution, business interruptions, and non-attack privacy claims. South African businesses are adopting. They're currently trying their level best, but however, the SME sector is negatively affected by these attacks.
I suppose that makes sense. If I'm a large listed, a top 40 on the JSE, for example, I've probably got a chief security officer focusing on this. But if I'm a smaller company, I've got so much else and I just haven't got the time, the skills, or perhaps even the budget to really manage and spend on it.
Yes, definitely the budgetary constraints when it comes to cybersecurity. But if you follow our best practices, you find that there's little things that an insurer or company can do to mitigate risk and to mitigate the size of the loss. By definitely employing those best practices, we can reduce the impact of the risk. The problem with the SME sector is that they have a negative attitude towards cybersecurity and they feel that they haven't been impacted, so it's not a cost for them. However, we're seeing cyber-specific legislation being driven by the legislature in various business classes and industries.
I like your point around just some simple best practices, some digital hygiene can make a huge difference. Do we have certain sectors globally and perhaps even in South Africa that seem more vulnerable to attacks?
Definitely. The sectors that are vulnerable to attacks is the health industry, financial services, manufacturing, supply chain, and also the professional services. But we find that there's a lot of attacks, especially for the financial services, manufacturing and industries.
Ransomware attacks, I mean, they certainly make the headlines, is my sense. They're exciting, particularly we've seen it, maybe it's a utility or a hospital or something, which is simply locked out of their businesses. Is ransomware the chief risk, or is that more just the media which highlights it a whole lot more?
No, there is definitely a ransomware pandemic. Even though that the risk has stabilized in the first half of 2024, we must bear in mind that 73% increase in ransomware attacks in 2023. And in 2024, 58% of the large losses are still attributed to ransomware attacks. So the companies, like I said, large companies have definitely improved their hygiene and their posture with regards to ransomware. However, like we said, SMEs are still lagging and are paying the price.
Yeah,
but your large corporates are definitely better equipped and to mitigate risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Also highlighted a trend of non-attack data privacy claims. What is non-attack? Is this sort of a class action suits and the like?
Yes, it is. Non-attack definitely is in that light. It's definitely, it's by way of improper collection of data. Do you know the specific legislative requirements in respect of how data needs to be stored, processed, and transferred. So it is currently a problem. But we are advising our companies to definitely employ best practices, which include network and data classification policies. So you find that when there is an incident, that they're better suited to handle the incident.
And in many cases, and you've mentioned best practices again, and I'm thinking, you know, how to keep client data. For example, in Europe, they've got the GDPR, which is a European policy. We don't have the same in South Africa. We do have POPI. But in many cases, I think for corporates and even SMEs, it's to go beyond the law rather than just the letter of the law.
Definitely. Just to tick, obviously, the boxes is not enough. You definitely need to go above and beyond. This could be even, your position could be even bettered by making use of an MSSP, a managed security service provider, which would definitely advise you in respect of how to allocate budgets to the proper risks and how to maintain and contain such risks.
We'll leave it at Santha Makapela. He's Senior Cyber Underwriter, Allianz Commercial. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Bianca Bortis on Friday. She, of course, from Citadel Global, talking around risks to the rand. We've seen strength. It's a couple of cents stronger today, but there's a lot of potential risk out there. We asked you if you expected the rand to strengthen or weaken in the months ahead. Around 40% said you're expecting stronger for now. A third said going weaker. The rest of you were saying, seems like fair value at about this point. And certainly, Bianca's fair value was around 1750, but as she said, it will move a whole bunch on either side of it. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating and a positive review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Calgary M3 results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.